Mini episode 1915 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1915. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben is usually here in his capacity as the FDH Hoops analyst. Not today. Sometimes he's here for some other things like our coverage of the streaming industry. He and I love delving into different business aspects of that. Sometimes some other topics. One of the things that increasingly Ben has been on to do is to review TV shows that he and I have both partaken of. And today it is Industry Season 4. We are taking a look back at what I'm going to go on. I don't think I'm going on a big limb to say this is going to be one of the big highlights of the year for TV, because in looking ahead at what we've got the rest of the year here, it's kind of like, because like 2025 was a year of surprising depth. It was a year that, you know, beyond what a lot of people would kind of tell you as far as the conventional wisdom goes, I found it to be a year of a lot of depth. Not so sure 2026 is going to be the same. But this is going to be one, Ben, where I know we are going to be remembering this fondly at the end of the year as one of the best TV seasons and one of the best shows that's on TV right now.
And I think one of the bigger things, too, Rick, this year was the full transition, because it used to be at Pierpoint for most of the first three seasons.
Yes.
And now we're entering the world of fintech. We're also looking at how people make decisions in terms of whether they, like, in, especially in terms of Yasmin, in terms of your personal values versus your business values.
And it takes a lot of different turns during this season. I mean, it's almost sort of akin to, as far as Pierpoint goes, that almost as though you're tracing folks. Now, this was, of course, the first job out of college for a lot of these folks, but almost sort of akin to college. It's like Pierpoint was the college years, and this was sort of like the first year of the real world. You could kind of look at it that way, because it's the first year. Pierpoint playing a role, episode 7 and 8 at the end there, as Tender is going for this, you know, kind of a head fake on doing a takeover of them as they're trying to keep everybody off of their tail. But it was a year where, again, when you look at it in terms of Yaz and in terms of Harper, the way that we had seen through the first couple of seasons, that was a thing where Harper, for all of the, I don't think it would be too strong to say evil things that she did from time to time here, she basically was a meritocracy type of a person. Now, in the most Darwinian way possible sometimes, but somebody that, and again, she said in the pilot, she just wanted to be judged on her merits and her talents. And that's been her through the course of the series here. Yaz has been somebody coming from privilege who, again, has had that to fall back on at various points in time. And that's been part of the whole rift between them, that the both characters have been jealous of what the other ones have had. What I don't think any of us expected to see was that the show would sort of take it in a direction where it would be this sort of big moral judgment between them. Because at the end of season 3, they had that big blow up and they said such awful things to each other. And they were both right about everything they said. And at the end of season 4, the falling out, it was much less dramatic than that. But it was one of these things with Harper where she was on this, and at times it was almost kind of a stealth thing, this sort of personal growth curve that she was on in season 4, to where it was almost like, in the wrestling parlance, kind of a babyface turn, to where you see the confrontation between them. And it's very, very, very clear that Harper's wearing the white hat and Yaz is wearing the black hat. There's no more shades of gray here. Yaz is the one pimping out young girls here, essentially, and going down the route that had long been theorized by a lot of Reddit detectives and everyone else that it would basically be a thing where Yaz would sort of be stepping into the Ghislaine Maxwell role. And indeed, that's where they went with it. So that was one of the things that was the most unexpected, was that not just comparatively between the two, but that Harper would be that much more of an admirable person than Yaz by the end of season four. I can tell you, I didn't see that coming.
I mean, one of the big things too, Rick, especially in earlier seasons, is that it was always this, if you remove season one,
mm-hmm.
between seasons two and three, it was this whole sort of discussion between, you know, Yaz's privilege and Harper's, you know, go-get-it-ness at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like to me, it's come to a point in season four where, and you know, this is a spoilered review, so obviously.
Yes.
I mean, one of the big things, too, is, like, there are a lot of people, like, Harper's character arc during the entire first three seasons, she did a lot of questionable things. We're not debating this at all.
Right. Absolutely.
But it's now coming to a point where she is the show's moral compass, which I don't think a lot of people would have predicted earlier on in season two and season three.
Not me.
But it's, I would say, like, it's also in a big moment, I would say, too, in terms of the series, is that it's this whole also discussion, especially when we talk about women in finance, because there's a high level group of incredibly powerful women, but we're also in the same timeline where a lot of people, when they think finance, it's a male dominated industry, and you're now having this juxtaposition of two different characters. One was raised in privilege, one was a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's one of the bigger points of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Is trying to understand, like, it's kind of sort of the have and have nots scenario. We've seen mm-hmm. this before in other TV shows, and I was really intrigued by the fact that industry decided to go there, because, to be honest, like, they were setting, I felt like, another season of, like, well, there's going to be this whole thing, you know, in terms of, like, peer point, all these other things, but they went the exact different scenario, which I thought was very intriguing, because, you know, the fintech world, as we know, is growing, and there's a lot of players in it, and there's a haves and have nots. So I always mm-hmm. feel like, personally, they did a really good job this season in terms of trying to balance all these characters out. And it's something we also saw in the Uber series with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, where you have a figure point, a head,
mm-hmm.
and you're now trying to position themselves in terms of the best case scenario. We saw that a lot with Kit Harington's character this season.
Yes, we did see that. And it was a very interesting arc that he went on, from being kind of like suicidal at the beginning of the season to sort of becoming kind of a, you know, brain-addled loser at the end of the season, but having some moments of standing up for himself in between, primarily towards the end. And also, you know, at the end of the season, again, the way that it went with his now, whether it be estranged wife, ex-wife, they don't really make clear where the whole divorce slash separation is at between him and Yaz. But the whole way that that went, I want to ask you about your thoughts on that, because that's a thing where, to use another wrestling reference here, past show guest Dave Meltzer, the most legendary pro wrestling journalist of all time, he's got a phrase that he uses sometimes called heat on the promotion as opposed to heat on the wrestler. And probably the best example of that would be, actually 20 years ago, Kurt Angle, when he was getting cheered against John Cena. It was the beginning of, like, hey, Cena's not supposed to be reacted to this way. And, like, no matter what Angle did, Angle would go out there and gloat about U.S. troops getting killed in Iraq and people would still be cheering. And nobody got mad at Kurt Angle, but a lot of people got mad at the promotion for making him go that far to try to get booze. So I got a little bit of a sense off air talking to you. I don't know if I picked up on this correctly or not, but that, like, the whole choice they made with Yaz, and it was a controversial one, but it was one where I got a little bit of a sense that you might have found that a little bit distasteful or cliche or whatever, that they went down that road. So is it a little bit of heat on the promotion with you, or did I kind of read that one wrong?
I kind of feel like it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you, Rick. I think when you ever have a show like this, and it's very similar to Succession, that you have to turn characters into the bad person at the end of it. You have to. Like, that's just how mm-hmm. it works. And I feel like this season was more, and in prior season, Yaz had been a little bit more behind the scenes, trying to build things and try to, she was sort of like the up-and-coming traitor at Pierpoint. And it felt like, to me, that at some point her arc was going to be, oh, she's going to be incredibly successful, even though she comes from this level of privilege.
Right. And,
but that's also what sparked this entire scenario with her and Harper, because Harper did not come from privilege. And it feels like to me that they're making this move to build for a future season. As we know, it has been renewed for season 5 at this time. And it feels like to me on some level, especially with these sort of drama series, like you have to take a character arc to be either positive or negative. And it felt like they were pushing Yaz to go negative.
They absolutely did. And it was a thing where, again, as I said to you off air, it's going to be very interesting to see what puts them in the orbit the final season, Harper and Yaz, because it's very clear that they're building towards something like that. And it really, at this point, is sort of a little bit of everybody else getting kind of winnowed out. When you look at some of the earlier season characters here, conceivably, you might drop Eric back into the mix at least briefly, but that seems kind of hard to believe after he got outed for being a, semi-unwitting pedo, I guess you would say, or just whatever that was. I mean, I've seen speculation online that the girl wasn't actually underage, but that they might have jimmied up her documents or whatever. And, you know, I think the actual age, as has come out once again in the pro wrestling business, because some wrestlers have used this as a defense, apparently 16 is the legal age in England, because there have been some wrestlers that have sort of hidden behind that distinction when they've gotten busted for it. But whether or not the girl was under 16 or not, Eric was meant to come off looking very, very, very poor in the whole thing. So you kind of struggle to think where he might kind of fit back in. But then again, could this possibly have been the last time we saw him? Rishi, on the other hand, I don't think there's any speculation, because he got a very, you could only say, Rishi type coda after everything that happened in seasons 2 and 3 with him. The way that it unfolded when he came back on the scene, his final kind of a breakdown that he went through there, we've probably seen the last of him. So you've got to have some kind of a scenario that puts Harper and Yaz back into each other's orbits here. I've speculated that perhaps Rob gets brought back into the mix a little bit. It had been something of a triangle between the three of them previously. But what the shape of season 5 is going to be is very fascinating, based on the way that this all ended up and based on the fact that one by one by one, the other characters have fallen by the wayside.
And I would say too, Rick, one of the bigger themes of the season was this whole construct of, like, we remember like 1980s Wall Street, you know, greed is good. And now we saw a scenario where Rishi's life gets incredibly changed. Obviously, Kit Harington's character, Sir Henry Ruck, also goes through a major change as well. And it's this whole construct of this whole sort of alpha male narrative. I am intelligent enough, I can do whatever. And then you see all the faults within these characters, and you see in terms of, at least for Rishi, like in terms of his wife's death, and seeing how his, you know, how his mother is dealing everything with his too. So it felt like for a lot of this season, it was focused mainly on Harper and Yaz, but it also felt like too was about not necessarily tearing down, but it's about all these major characters who are big personalities who believe that they can do anything, realizing their own worth and their own ability, which is a very distinct scenario, because we don't see this a lot in dramas. It's usually the opposite. It's usually someone else getting teared down, but it's mostly these two characters are very distinct within the season in terms of they have this high level of power. Mm-hmm. And then they lose it. You could say the same thing too with the James Dyker character too. He had his own level of power during the series, and then he lost it in the timeline where essentially Haley Clay, you know, who's played by Kiernan Shipka of all people, was able to bring him down in that timeline. And it's a very interesting scenario where we all have, especially in the financial sectors, and we see this in terms of stuff that's been discussed in, you know, FTX and all these failed financial institution companies, where essentially it's a boys club. But at the end of the day, there are also a lot of powerful women running these things. So it's going to be very interesting to see for season five, what is the major plot point that they want to focus on? Because the first three seasons were mainly Pierpoint. This year was Tender. And then in season five, we'll see where they decide to end up at the end of the day.
Yep. It'll almost certainly be something new, just like Tender was. We didn't know what that was before this season started, so we probably don't know what the focus of season five is going to be. Of course, Yaz ended up on Yaz and Henry because they were both associated with Tender. That's what put them on the other side of Harper, because she was out to short them after getting the tip from Jim Diker. And you had mentioned about Kit Harington before, and for all the women out there that are always commenting on what a snack that guy is, I officially don't want to hear it from anybody when I say that my three favorite words of this season were, "Thank you, Mommy," which, you know, Kiernan Shipka sure knows how to hit her mark walking off an elevator, does she not? So
I mean, the rule we like to say, right? We don't like to quote Drake often, but she can really get it.
That's right. That's right. And
she was a fantastic character this season.
And to paraphrase Double Down Trent from back in the day, Sally Draper is all grows up. But that was an interesting subplot, that there were a couple of them that she was involved in through the course of the year. The character that was most going head to head with Harper at various points in time of the season, most of the season, really, Whitney Halberstram. Who, that was one heck of a way that the character was written, was acted out, everything about that. And just, almost as though they decided to take a character that was like the human embodiment of like Twitter, basically, you know, finance bro type, whatever, you know, and just pour that into flesh and blood as he's going through and he's giving his bromides about the philosophy of the firm and everything that they're doing, and the constant stream of BS from this guy through the course of the season in very polished tones with a very polished kind of presentation throughout the course of the year. And he was a very, very, very formidable adversary for Harper through the course of the year. And that, again, what turned out to be as the season went along and as it started to take this turn towards channeling the whole Epstein and Maxwell type thing here, that was what took down Eric. When it turned out that the prostitute, who may or may not have been underage, there was some question about the documentation there, but you were certainly led to believe that she was anyways. That whole thing being orchestrated by Whitney, it didn't stop Eric from going on that TV debate with him and giving as good as he got under the circumstances here. But a very, very, very formidable character, and one that at the end of episode six really appeared to have the upper hand. It was really only what did it in episode seven was Yaz's just ruthless thing of like, okay, well, I guess I have to burn Henry to the ground to get us out of this thing here. And that's what ended up turning the tide. That's the thing that Whitney hadn't counted on having happen, was that she would, you know, join in the destruction herself of the entire enterprise. But just the way that everything went and the way that Whitney was orchestrating everything, and with the African quote-unquote office that they had there, the African operations, as far as a big bad for the season, what an amazing character that industry introduced and brought to life in this season.
I mean, one of the big things too, Rick, and I think we discussed this off-air at one point, especially with the season, is that it was very focused in on the fintech business versus, you know, the established, because Pierpoint was this major investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now in a timeline where anyone can have a major investment firm. You can build your own capital. You can build your own life. You don't necessarily need that. So we're seeing that whole transition of, it's very similar to what we saw in like 1980s Wall Street, essentially. Like, there's always the big banks, the Lehman Brothers, in terms of like Bank of America, all these big entities. But now you have these newer players, but in a weird way, they're like the older players. They're still the same companies. It's just gussied up in a newer way of looking at things. And I feel like, too, especially with this season, one of the big critiques is that everything old is new again. And a lot of these fintech brands, even though they position themselves as new, you know, like not a bank, we push this entire narrative like you are still a bank. It hasn't changed. It's really just, you know, it's just gussied up to look at something different.
That's right. And certainly the Whitney character was very much involved in trying to do that and trying to present Tender as being exactly what he wanted it to be in any given moment here. By the way, the name of the actor here, Max Minghella, he did a tremendous job.
He was great. His biggest roles too, Rick. I think most people know him from The Social Network, the Facebook movie. But he also did a fantastic job in The Handmaid's Tale, which he won a... He didn't win, but he was nominated for a primetime Emmy for his role in that series.
So not having seen any of that with him, I guess you could bring up the Shaq meme for me if I was not familiar with your game. But he was a tremendous actor in this series. He really did a great job. And when you're talking about these upstart companies kind of rising up, it showed their ability to be big players on the scene, not just financially, but in a little bit of a foreshadowing towards where it would go at the end of the season with Yaz. There was a huge backdrop the entire season with British politics and with the Labour government in Britain and the fictionalized version of it in this show, and the way that certain characters in the government were compromised by their association with Tender and how that all played out and who ended up becoming the scapegoat for that. And so the way that that all went, that part was very much they were going for kind of a ripped from the headlines kind of a deal. And you had a couple of other things here as well that in the course of a relatively short season, 8 episodes, you had 2 of them where one that was just completely given over to, it was episode 4.2. That was between Yaz and Henry and catching you up on what had happened in the early days of their marriage, Henry washing out of parliament, getting voted out, going into depression, and then taking the job with Tender to be a front man as kind of a lifeline here. And then a couple episodes later, there was also the B plot, because I think this is when Harper's mom passed away and they was dealing with that. And then there was a little bit of discord between Eric and his daughters with him being an absentee dad as per usual. But the main part of that episode was given over to the African operation there where Sweet Pea and the other gentlemen from the firm were down there and rooting around and eventually getting at the truth. And not before Sweet Pea ended up getting assaulted, by the way. So there were a couple of episodes where they kind of stepped outside of the normal course of events and just went in a more kind of channeled direction here. And I felt like it worked pretty well, because there was never any point in the season where I thought it wasn't kind of like to go to another show that we reviewed about this time more or less a year ago, White Lotus Season 3. We were kind of like, when are they going to get to it? When are they going to, like, this is a fictional week in the course of the show. When are we really going to get to what's happening? We're building and building and building. I didn't feel like that was the case with industry this season. I felt like it was paced fairly well, even as they took a couple of episodes to really specialize in specific areas of the plot.
And I think, too, like, one of the biggest, I would say, positives of this season is that they did a very good job of balancing all these character arcs, because what we've seen a lot in drama series, and I know, Rick, you will completely agree with me, there will be times when a season of television comes out and we'll be like, why did we do this season? What was the point of this?
Yeah.
Was this just to move the plot along or anything like that? And again, too, like, the whole sort of, like, secondary industry of, you know, what Tender was essentially, it was kind of, it wasn't a pump and dump, but what it was ultimately at the end of the day, it was a company that was essentially creating false profits at the end of the day and building it from there. And we have to give credit to Tamar Jamal, who played Cal Bennett. And for a lot of the people out there who do watch a lot too, that's Sam Elbasaya from, you know, Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. I think everyone's going to remember him for that, but he did a great job in the season of industry too. So I feel like it was very reflective of what we're going on in today's society, Rick, with a lot of these companies farming out, you know, their abilities to other regions. We know Meta recently got into a lot of trouble for some of that stuff as well. So I felt like they were playing it very close to the vest for this season, but they also were able to discuss these broader ideals, which I think in the financial industry, we talk about it a lot, but it's only when a company fully goes under. It's never in the moment when a company's trying to go public or everything in relation to that. So it's very interesting to see that that was the decision they wanted to make for this season.
It was. And ultimately, the whole farce in the end of where Tender is, quote unquote, trying to buy out Pierpoint and bring them in and that entire bluff that they were trying to run here. And that Tender, when you look at all the things that were behind them through the course of the year, we see it as a company that, again, even through the expose of the African operations, appears to just be a very, very high-level scam that is, manipulating a lot of these things here, but essentially sort of doing so under its own steam. But you come to find out as we go along here, as I mentioned, the Epstein/Maxwell subplot of the whole thing. Let's throw in the Russians as well, because this is where, sort of the modern day equivalent of the KGB kind of comes into play. When Whitney is dealing with people that actually scare him, the real backers of this firm here who are trying to control everything. And that, so it ends up being this amalgam of these different elements coming together here in one very, very sinister ball. And that ultimately, even as the firm itself gets vanquished and the whole thing basically implodes, it's sort of like the poison scatters here. And some of the operations of compromise that they were doing with different finance and politicians and whatever, Yaz picks up the baton on this of all people and keeps some of that going. And it's very, very heavily implied that the same Russian backers of Tender are going to be involved in some other ventures as well here. So it's one of those things where, again, you see the big bad get taken down, at least you come to find out in the end, again, Whitney is sort of exposed less as being the big bad, as sort of like half big bad, but half puppeteer of, or half puppet of bigger bads, I guess you would say. Even as he gets vanquished, there is a sense that, again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And you have that sense there at the end of the season that just, the wheel keeps turning. And that Harper, and it's really, really interesting, because like I said, I didn't think they were necessarily going for a redemption arc with her, but they kind of were. That it was a thing where she was using a lot of her usual ruthless tactics, but against real bad guys for once. She wasn't victimizing people the way that she did in seasons 1 through 3. She was going after sort of the worst of the worst. And that's what kind of leads you to wonder at the end of the season here. There was a sense that, like, she might not want to necessarily just be all about Schwartz the way that she was here. But there is a sense where, I think it's going to be hard to kind of turn back in terms of some of the growth that she had. And that maybe setting her sights on both making money and being successful and whatever, but doing it in the service of taking down more scumbags, maybe that turns out to be the focus of season 5 for her.
Right, and we can totally see that coming, and especially in that final episode when she was essentially was like, I don't recognize my friends anymore. And I feel like if you're creating a character and you're trying to build their sort of redemption arc, you don't have them say that until they are that level at that period of time, in my opinion.
Right.
And it feels like, too, Harper's character was kind of undefined for a little bit of the first couple seasons. And then now it's also being viewed as someone who wants to make money, but also still have some level of morality. It's weird because if you really look at her character arc, I don't think a lot of us thought Harper would be the moral compass of this show.
No.
And it feels like they are positioning Harper to be the moral compass. And it feels like, I don't know, I don't think if you would have told me to watch Industry Season 2 and then watch Industry Season 4, like, Harper would have this redemption arc. But I understand where a TV show needs to have a character that does that.
Well, and they started with her, in ways that sort of echoed previous seasons here. I mean, her little tete-a-tete that she had with Whitney at the beginning of the season here, where he presents her with the cylindrical gift, if you will. Like, it felt very on the nose for as far as the way they were trying to portray Harper. So there was nothing in the early days of the season that would necessarily lead you to believe that one of the big keys to this season is going to be the personal growth of this character, and that's going to be part of what allows her to take down the big bads at Tender. And it's a thing, too, where I don't think you and I have discussed this off air, so I'll be very interested to get your thoughts on this. But, like, I kept waiting and waiting at various points in time with a lot of the vulnerability that was there with Sweet Pea as far as, as some of her, OnlyFans-esque stuff kind of got exposed there and whatever, that part of me always anticipated that Harper at some point would turn on her, that Harper was just exploiting her in some way. But, like, the fact that Harper turned out to have legitimate loyalty / I guess you could say even friendship. I mean, Harper's not the kind of person we think of as far as having friends, but, like, for her to actually have warm feelings towards Sweet Pea surprised me, because I had seen her through the course of the first three seasons, just look at everyone as sort of pawns on a chessboard. Were you surprised by that as I was?
I mean, I feel like it was a little bit there, but I also know, like, the writers were probably trying to frame Sweet Pea as the Gen Z character of the show. And it feels like they were focusing in on how her decision-making impacts her job at some level. And then when now she's essentially moved on from Pierpoint, it's a kind of a different role. And we've always discussed this, too, because especially in this timeline, too, the OnlyFans narrative is a huge narrative, despite what people will say about OnlyFans. There's a lot of discussion about celebrity status. A lot of people make a huge amount of money on the platform. And it felt like they put that in specifically to try and make her character, even though she is a very beautiful woman and has a very high profile job, you still sometimes have to make capital. And I feel like that's what part of her character was. And it's really interesting to see Harper kind of protect her in this scenario, because I almost feel like if the roles were reversed, I feel like Harper would be okay with doing what Sweet Pea was doing at that time.
I think so, too. And that was something that I really came to believe as I was watching it. And I just think, again, the way that everything unfolded with the different characters through the course of the season really was fascinating. And that's just one of the things that industry continues to nail so well. Some of it is also, too, and you see this on some of the truly great shows that are out there, like Breaking Bad and some of the other ones that are not afraid to sort of break format a bit as far as the storytelling. But the episode six, which was a really, really, really pivotal one, because it was basically where Whitney was putting together the big counterattack on the forces that were looking to short his firm, the episode entitled Dear Henry. The way that it kept going through the course of the episode is you kept getting the narration from Whitney and Dear Henry and whatever. And then he says some stuff, and then it comes back. It cuts to that later on, Dear Henry, blah, 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 blah. And then you come to find out at the end of the episode that it's more or less a blackmail letter, as he's kind of laying everything out here and saying, you are implicated in all of this. So the way that was done, that was one of those sort of nonlinear ways of telling a story that was fascinating to me, the way that they kept interjecting that in. Not that the episode itself, not that the storytelling itself was necessarily nonlinear, but the way that kept getting injected in with the voiceovers was something that really distinguished it from the way that a quote-unquote normal episode would go. And I think it really drove home the magnitude of how much Whitney was able to turn the tables, if momentarily, because we would see it come unraveling by episode seven already, and then certainly in episode eight, which was the fallout episode. But the way that they did that, Ben, just, kudos to them, because that's something that really only the great shows, number one, dare to try to do, and number two, can pull off.
Right, and one of the big things too, Rick, is for anyone who's watched this series so far, Industry season one seemed very, like, attempting to create a world. Like, they were building Pierpoint up in that period of time. And it felt like when they transitioned into seasons 2 and 3, they figured out their sort of play. And again, we've seen this in drama series before with Breaking Bad, with Succession. We can maybe even make an argument for Porpoise a little bit too. It takes room to grow a drama series. This is not a half-hour comedy where you're just trying to world build and make jokes along the way. So it feels like to me, at least for industry season 4, it was about a lot of turning points in this season. There were a lot of different things that happened that would not have normally happened at Pierpoint. So we are now seeing sort of the character development within Yaz and Harper, and essentially the whole building of the fintech industry right now, which is, this is a very new industry, but it's also a very old industry, and we have to sort of piece together or figure out where the financial industry is kind of heading, because it's a completely different world than I would say when industry started in season 1. You're now seeing the growth of a lot of these smaller companies, but it's essentially just, you know, gussying up at the end. It's any fintech business in this timeline is very similar. And we saw what happened with, again, I wouldn't say Silicon Valley Bank was fintech, but we see the world in terms of the financial industry, how many things can rapidly change.
Yes.
And one big thing I thought from this sort of season was trying to understand how characters can react and how you make adaptations within the financial industry as well.
Yes. Excellent points, because that was what they managed to do. You managed to, you know, some of the things that we saw being imparted, especially in season 1, and then to a certain extent, season 2, seeing it be put into practice in the real world, never more so than in season 4. And I also kind of feel like where I'm seeing a parallel with this show. This is a thing where, and this is another show that both you and I watch, there are not a lot of people that would necessarily draw parallels between these two shows. They're on different networks. The one thing that is very, very much in common between them is the intensity of it. The show that I'm talking about is The Bear, because I feel like it's a thing where both shows, Landmark season 1, really daring, different kind of construct. By the way, some of the nonlinear storytelling that they do in The Bear also, they do that an awful lot as far as like where they're almost trying to virtually take you inside somebody's head with what they're visualizing in their moments of stress and panic attacks. But then the middle seasons of it, I kind of feel like there were some swings and misses. There were some swings and hits. And I think both shows, by the time they hit season 4, kind of had it figured out. Like they kind of figured out what the destination was for where they wanted to go with it, what they wanted it to look like. And in the case of both shows, I think they both have one more season to go. And it's just a matter of basically sticking the landing on it. So both shows, again, not afraid to take risks, not afraid to take a lot of chances in there. And so the middle seasons of both of them, seasons 2 and 3, there were some things on both shows that I liked and I didn't like. But I felt like by season 4, both of those shows really had it figured out as far as what they were doing. That's something that I find to be a big commonality with them.
And we also know too, Rick, with both of those series, season 1 will always be experimental with most drama series. We know that right away. Mm-hmm. And I feel like one of the things that both The Bear and Industry do a really good job on is fleshing out a lot of these characters. Because mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes in drama series, you get positioned as, you know, the white hat, black hat, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it feels like these series that are so popular are creating characters who have platitudes. They have multiple different things about them. And I feel like that's what Industry did super well this season in terms of Harper's growth, in terms of her moralistic narrative. We saw Yaz devolve a little bit. We also saw periods of time of Sir Henry devolve a little bit in terms of his almost suicide at that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that these shows do a really good job of creating believable characters. Because I feel like the television audience now is 10 years ahead of where it used to be, to where we are not going to watch a show with one-dimensional characters anymore.
Right.
We want our characters to contain platitudes and great, you know, prestige TV, I would say.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and Harper, the whole way through, and what's interesting is, and like when I described before, that by the end of season four, she was sort of wearing the white hat. That's a long-ass journey that she traversed, because she had been, to this point, at best, an anti-hero. You know, think Don Draper, think Walter White. Like, that had been her previously, to all the way, you know, becoming, you know, a good guy sort of in the end, at least comparably speaking, at least compared to the rest of the universe that she inhabited. Versus what's interesting is you could even sort of make a comparison a little bit with Carmi, who I think, as much as he could in The Bear, was always trying to be a good guy. And I think probably was a little more delusional about himself than Harper was. Harper just kind of accepted being an a-hole and stepping on people and whatever. And I think for Carmi, it was just a thing where, because of his own insecurities, panic attacks, things that he was dealing with, he was just sort of doing the best that he could. And I think he was probably oblivious as to how he came off to people a lot of times as well. But he was somebody where I think the personal growth that he had made him sort of more of a pure white hat kind of a character there as well. So the moral ambiguity of the lead characters is another thing that both shows have in common. And it is, this is one of the things where when you talk about sort of the wider net here of so many of the shows we've reviewed on the show, that as Alan Sepinwall, a great TV critic, would call the new golden age of TV in the 21st century here. And it goes to exactly what you said. Your last point is that main characters without any kind of moral ambiguity are part of a bygone age. You are not going to be a prestige show if your character is just a pure white hat kind of a character from start to finish. Might end up there, but if that's your character the whole way, there's a real ceiling as to how great you can be critically in this day and age.
Right, and I will give industry a lot of credit too, Rick, that from the first season onward, they were experimenting, it felt like, in season one. Mm-hmm. And they were able to catch their stride in seasons two and three and four, which was a fantastic season. It's going to be really interesting to see where they want to go in season five. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like they could do anything they really want to do. I know we're in the post FTX timeline, so it would not shock me if we could see Harper being more of a whistleblower in the future, or if we're going to pursue Yaz's as the Ghislaine Maxwell character. We'll see. They have a lot of avenues, and I will say, especially too for HBO Max, and again, eventually, as we all know, they have that deal with Paramount Plus coming up. This is kind of one of HBO's key shows right now. And it feels like this is probably, and we'll discuss this in other timelines, because you and me both watched every episode of Succession as well.
Yep.
That it's, I don't think industry is there, but it's within that range of being one of the top HBO shows that has been produced in recent memory.
I agree. I think
it was both, like, in season one, it was a shared production with them and the BBC. But
yes, I think they are both top tier shows when you look at the history of TV. I think where Succession is closer to the front of the line. And I don't know that industry is going to be able to do anything to catch it, just because of the nature of what the show is. It's a different kind of a show. It's a tighter ensemble. And at this point, we're sort of down to Yaz and to Harper at this point. I'm going to call my shot on this one for season five, based on the fact that if I remember correctly, I think industry, a lot of shows these days, it's been sort of an every other year kind of a thing on when it airs. By that notion, we could be looking at the final season of Industry coming in 2028. And here's my guess. My guess is right now, the writers are probably keeping it completely limber because of everything they did in season four. It was kind of ripped from the headlines. Not that they didn't do a couple things like that previously, but especially season four. Very, very, very topical. In season two, post-COVID, there was some of that as well. I think the writers right now, they're sitting back and they're kind of looking on and looking to see here, because whatever ends up happening with the war and the spillover effects and everything else like that, there is a great prospect for some kind of major reshaping of the financial system coming out of this, and some of the different areas in the world that are really going to be struggling as far as fuel loss and famine, potentially because of fertilizer and other things like that. So if it starts to go maybe a little bit of like a vulture capitalist kind of a thing, of maybe like some financiers trying to get involved and trying to profit off of misery post-war, or whatever it ends up being, my guess is it's going to be pegged to the things that we're watching on TV right now in the news, and basically what it looks like at the end of this thing, and I think how the major characters end up fitting into that landscape. That's my prediction, is that that's what it's going to look like, especially when you look at season two being the post-COVID season. I think they're going to do it again here, but that is going to mean they're not really going to be able to form any serious ideas about what's going to happen, maybe characters and things like that. But as far as the actual landscape of what the world looks like, if I'm right, they're going to have to wait for the reshaping of the world to happen before they can basically complete the storytelling. That's what I think season five is going to be.
Right. And I feel like that's probably one of the lead examples, Rick. Another scenario, like we talked about FTX, we could totally see another scenario of that playing out at some level. There's also a lot of discussion too, as we all know, in terms of the world of sports, prediction markets is a big thing right now as well. So it would not shock me if that potentially turns into a possible secondary storyline in terms of, you know.
Oh, great call. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I feel like what you're saying is probably going to be it. But if it doesn't go that route, I do think prediction markets make a lot of sense at this period of time, because it's highly discussed and it would kind of fit into the sort of White Knight Harper narrative of trying to prevent a lot of these situations from occurring.
Well, you know, and based on what we've seen with recent events and with what's happened with market things happening based on announcements that come out, who's to say it won't be both? Who's to say it won't be something like the prediction markets of like, you know, somebody betting on a nuclear explosion happening because they had inside knowledge, and then it happens. And then the whole thing of like, OMG, how could you profit off of something like that? Could be a melding of what you and I are talking about. Matter of fact, that seems likely, I think, given this show. Yeah. You know,
if we see the plot lines in the future, Rick, we already know we called it. We called it 2 years early.
Matter of fact, that's the great thing about these mini episodes being time stamped and everything like that, because then I might be the thing. I might have to get Dewey, Cheatham, and Howell on the phone lines here and be like, hey guys, I think they stole from us. So you know, I think these are some very good ideas for where they're going to be going in season five. And again, trying to keep it as fresh as they can. And the thing that I will say too, is that like, if they tried right now to kind of write out what it's going to be, if they try to just formulate off of whatever, and just, if you have the sort of normalcy bias that like, okay, well, we're just going to write it and we're just going to assume that in the next year or two, everything's going to kind of snap back to normal. That is a gigantic leap of faith, given what we're looking at right now and given a number of, frankly, unprecedented and very unsettling circumstances in the world, and the way that with globalization, you know, there's something that can happen in one key area and a Strait of Hormuz is having ripple effects all over the globe. I would think it would be a tremendous gamble if they're trying to just write out a season of like, okay, we have these ideas, we're going to go with this, and we're going to try and fit it into the landscape of 2028 as best as we can. I think they're going to have to wait to see what the future looks like before they get into that a little bit more. That's my guess.
Ryan, I would say too, it's a very unique scenario.
Yes.
And we're on top of that, we haven't even talked about the potential of an AI season as well too.
Yeah. How about that?
That's also in the cards as well. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're going to go further down that road.
We're in a very different economic time. And I remember Rick had a friend tell me, like, we are living through probably the next great industrial revolution.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, as we all know,
yeah,
when any industrial revolution occurs, jobs will be lost and problems will be manufactured because of that.
Right. It, you know, I could just see right now, maybe that's another thing that gets folded into the scenario that we're talking about here also too, to like, hey, Yaz's pedo ring is going to be part of selling killer AI robots to the Iranians. Maybe they tie that in. Maybe this just becomes a big soup ball of everything going on here. You know, all these different areas. It is the last season after all, right? You might as
Yeah,
well throw the
correct.
kitchen sink at it. So it, maybe it all fits into this. Who knows? But it is going to be fascinating to see. And again, season four, I thought was a great one. I think certainly one of the very best of industry. I was very happy with it. I thought it was even better than season three, which I thought was better than season two. I believe looking back on it, I think it was season two where I was just kind of like, eh, at a lot of different points in time versus with the bear. I think it was season three that made me feel that way. But it's the sign of a great show that they go through their, you know, kind of, you know, learning pains, whatever you want to call it, growth pains, whatever, and then kind of come out on the other end. In both cases, I felt like season four, it was a very, very strong statement setting themselves up for season five. We should be, hopefully, this year. I think looking forward to the Bear season five. That should be coming up this year, I think, because that has not tended to skip years. So hopefully we'll have that to review in a couple of months. But any other thoughts about industry season four and where it left us?
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of unanswered questions, and this is what you can tell Rick is a really good drama series, is where you don't know where they're going with it. And I
Right.
feel like that's a very good thing for a show like this, because I feel like if it's too structured, it's not going to be as interesting.
Yes. They always keep you guessing. Again, we didn't know anything about the whole tender thing coming into the season here. And you know, as far as you know, again, anybody that was, you know, cast for this season here, again, we didn't have any way of knowing what specific type of roles. Like, we knew that Kiernan Shipka was going to be part of it. We didn't know that it was going to be quite as memorable as it ended up being by the time it was all said and done. So, you know, you don't necessarily know until you start watching. But again, you know, just that the just the cold open of the season. I remember texting you at the time that just like, you know, the dance track that they were playing, throwback dance track with Kiernan Shipka in the club here. It's just like, well, this is a statement. This season is going to be just insane. And it ended up being that. And season five, I look forward to. I'm sure there's going to be a cold open that's going to set the tone exactly the same way. But always enjoy getting to break this down with you, my man. Thank you so much for being here, Ben Chu. I know you're a great enthusiast of industry as I am, so thank you so much for your thoughts, brother.
I appreciate it, man.
Much appreciated on my end, man. Thank you so much, and thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1915.